Welcome to Finding Your Voice. I am your host, Per Bristow. I'm the creator of The Sing With Freedom, The Singing Zone, Speak With Freedom, Perform With Freedom, Peak Performance Mastery Training Programs, and other goodies. And here we are going to go deep into areas of voice, expression, communication, performance, releasing fears. Who are we really? How can we release what we are truly capable of in life? Get ready for some powerful conversations with some really fascinating people from all around the world. All right, welcome to another episode. Now today, I am talking with Selina Craig, who is in, where are you? Hampshire, UK?
I'm in a country village in Hampshire overlooking fields, only it's dark.
Fantastic. So you have a very interesting story, and I think this is going to be very inspiring for people. I wanted to talk to you. You were at my Berlin event, and you came up to me, and you shared a little bit about your story then, which sounded really fascinating. And then you were so kind to help out at my event in London, and here we are. So I want to dig into this a little bit more, because this is important. I know that you love to sing, you love to, you love music, but it's rather remarkable, because when you were a child, you were diagnosed as, 75% deaf?
Yes, 75% deaf.
Wow. Okay, so let's go through how this changed from there, but let's go back to those days. What was your experience then? Because as a child, you probably don't know anything different.
I didn't really know anything different. And I was probably quite dreamy. And I got moved to the front of the class because I guess they thought I couldn't hear I was dreaming. Mm. And not paying attention. So, and then my hearing was tested. And I don't remember a lot of this. And was found to be 75% deaf. I'd had lots of, ENT problems, sinusitis, tonsillitis, all that.
And how old were you when you got that diagnosis?
I must have been 7.
Do you remember?
7 or 8. I don't remember. What I remember is singing. I mean, I was always singing in my head and kind of singing to myself. And I just remember being told to be quiet because I was not singing in tune, which, I didn't really understand, because to me, I could hear it as it should sound.
Yeah, I can imagine that if you don't know anything different, how would you know? If someone says you're 75% deaf, you wouldn't know what it meant to not be.
I didn't really know. I didn't know the fact of it until I was grown up and had the medical notes in my hand and was able to read them, which is quite rare. I happened to have them for an appointment that I had to take them with me. But I do remember having my tonsils out and coming round from the operation.
But before we go there, because I want to understand what it's like to be a child. So if you're sitting in a room, do you realize that other people can hear stuff and you can't? Or how does that work?
Well, I could hear stuff. I guess it was just quiet.
Yeah.
Or subdued.
But were people complaining that you weren't responding?
Because I hadn't always been deaf. So I could speak normally.
Uh-huh. Okay.
And I must have been able to hear well enough to pick up tunes and sing. My dad was always singing.
Okay.
And he played him, harmonica, and he played him a harmonica and a piano accordion and a piano, a ukulele. He'd pick up an instrument and work out a tune,
right,
although he couldn't read music either. So, I was used to hearing music and singing from a young age. And I don't really remember what it was like to be deaf, except that I would go and try out for the choir and, get told, thank you, dear, but not really.
Yeah. And how did that feel?
I was desperate to join the choir. Mm. I just wanted to be in that group of people who could sing.
And everybody else was in the choir and you weren't? Or?
Well, the ones I thought were the cool people, the ones I wanted to be with, were in the choir. But more importantly, they got to sing, nice, cool stuff and learn things. And I just wanted to be part of that group.
Yeah, of course. We all want to belong. We all need to fit in. That's, of course, we want to be part of that.
So yeah, it was my goal to join that choir. That was a goal that I really wanted.
And then, so you're trying out for the choir and they say no thanks.
And several times.
Every term. That's right. I think you mentioned that, right? So even though you were denied, you tried again.
Yeah.
Why? Most people would give up. No, maybe not.
I don't know. I wanted it that much. And I guess because I was always singing to myself. But I would get told to be quiet because I wasn't singing in tune. Yeah. And that kind of hurt. So I wanted to be better.
Of course. Huh. Wow. Okay. So you try out again and again and again. And you're denied every time.
Yeah.
Huh.
Maybe three times, but it seems like a lot when you're,
Of course. I think we can all relate to that.
I mean, each term.
Of course, everybody can relate to that. Go back to your childhood, everybody, and maybe you had experiences like that. You tried to belong, you tried to fit in, you wanted to be in some kind of group, and then you were denied. And then you try again, you're denied again, you try again, and you're denied again. Huh. So then, there was something with your tonsils.
Yeah, well, they reckon when they diagnosed me as deaf, they found my eustachian tubes were blocked. Well, I read this later. I didn't know this at the time as a child.
Right.
And so I went into hospital, had my tonsils out. They were very enlarged.
How old were you now?
Probably rising eight.
Okay. Yep.
So it's kind of after a year of being not allowed in the choir.
Right.
And being, seemed to be a bit dreamy in class and not paying attention.
Yes.
Living a bit in my own little world. My father always called me the head fairy. He thought I was always a bit, fey.
Yes, I think a lot of us have been accused of that. But also, of course, if you're in that situation, when you're not participating with all the audio experiences of the world, that's, of course, a common thing. So then they decided that you're going
to sing to myself.
Yeah. So then you had some kind of procedure then.
Yeah, I had my tonsils were removed.
Okay.
And that I will never forget that, because when I came round from the anaesthetic, the noise in the ward was indescribably loud. Wow. The first thing I heard was these in the days of, this is quite a long time ago because I'm, a certain age, when there were the long open wards and the nurses push big metal trolleys and with metal implements on them, and they were all rattling and clattering, and it was really a cacophony of noise. And I'd never heard anything like that or that loud. And then when somebody spoke to me, it was so loud. I wasn't used to hearing voices that loud. So it took me a while to get used to it.
Yeah, what a shock.
Shock. The world was a very noisy place suddenly, and if a child cried, I mean, it was piercing, all these noises were really, really quite a shock.
Right. And we can imagine that having gotten used to one situation, excuse me, where you as a child don't realize that there's an issue because it's just my world. And then suddenly that happens. It's not necessarily that the reaction is, woohoo, I can hear. It's probably now there's a threat to the whole system. It's like, where's all this noise coming from?
Yeah, it took a while to get used to it.
Yeah.
To sort of, not be shocked or want to sort of, go somewhere quiet, because I found it quite stressful to begin with, I think.
Oh, really? So you felt that sometimes you needed to get away into a quiet place?
Well, I was. Don't forget, I was used to quiet.
Yeah.
Yeah, so anyway, so, as I recovered, I started to sing to myself again, and I didn't get told to be quiet so often. I mean, it was often by members of my own family telling me to be quiet.
Yes.
I was singing off key or something. Not my dad, I have to say. He was always very loyal. Once I was sort of recovered and the next term came, because it was done in the summer holidays, I guess a couple of months of the summer holidays, when I went back, I thought, okay, I'll try for the choir again. And their faces were a picture, you know, you could see them rolling their eyes. Here she comes again. And to their surprise, I could sing in tune. And they were very surprised. And they said, wow, that's very nice. Would you like to join the choir? And those words were just wonderful.
Wow.
I was just so thrilled to be invited to join this group that I regarded as being so special.
Yes.
Wow. So that was, you know, tick.
Congratulations.
Goal achieved. And then, you know, then of course it gets hard. You have to learn stuff. I didn't read music, so I had to learn to, you know, they start trying to teach you to read music a bit. And, but I found I could hear it, you know, I could hear a tune and then learn it quite quickly.
Yeah.
So, which is something I inherited from my dad. I think he had a very good ear.
Amazing. And then you never stopped singing from that day.
I didn't, and I've even sung in Guildford Cathedral with, 12 other school choirs. So that was quite something.
Yeah. And I know you've sang in a lot of different constellations, groups, choirs, but it's not your profession, which is actually what makes this so interesting, that music is and singing is such a huge part of your life and has always been.
Well,
then, I guess.
My training was medical research. I did a degree in immunology,
mm-hmm.
and then I did a master's. Well, I was on the way to doing a PhD, and sadly, I didn't complete it. But I did 2 years, so I got a master's degree on the research I did on brain tumors. So, you know, very different.
Well, is it so different? I mean, you've experienced some kind of problem somewhere that seems logical that would then create some kind of interest in that area?
Yeah, it was fascinating. Yeah, I guess I like to look for a solution.
Mm-hmm.
Problem solving. You know, I don't like not being able to solve a problem. So I can't say I solved a problem in the brain tumor department, but, you know, I contributed to the research that was going on and handed it over to somebody else when I started having my children.
Right. Amazing. So do you think that, because you've also been a very high level athlete, and do you think then that this experience sort of fostered that sort of fighting instinct, the instinct of wanting to improve and get better and compete? Or is it the other way around, that because you already had that within, that you kept going for those auditions all the time? What do you think?
That's a hard question to answer. I don't know. Yeah, I did compete up to county level. I think I told you before when we were chatting that I was constantly beaten at county level. I mean, I won no problem at school. I held the school record for high jump, you know, doing it the scissors way over the pole and over the bar. And in the days when you landed on hard ground, so I have bad knees now, mm-hmm. you know. And I was clearing quite high and held that school record for quite a few years, which was nice. And then I'm competing at county level, and I managed to clear 5 feet. And we talked about this before. You work in feet and inches. Yeah, so 60 inches. I did clear 60 inches. And I thought, okay, surely that's enough this time. I can beat that girl. But no, she came back and beat me again. By 4 inches, so she did 5'4", but she was doing the Fosbury flop, which I never mastered. So
right.
Sadly,
you
I was
were
always
right in the cusp of that era, huh?
Yeah, that now you can work at dates me a bit. And I must have been 15 or 16 when I was doing that.
And yes, you did mention the frustration of always getting beat by this one girl. However, what happened to her?
She went on to be an Olympic high jumper. So.
We will forgive you.
Oh, good. Thank you. I tried. I definitely tried.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we were
chatting. Her name was Barbara Inkpen. just in case anybody wants to look her up.
Okay. Fantastic. All right. And you know that I talk about competition a lot, and I come from a sports background, and I think competition is beautiful if we use it in the sense that we're using it to improve ourselves. So we could argue then that you getting beat by her all the time also fostered a desire for you to train harder, yes or no?
Yeah, of course.
Okay.
Yeah, following year, you know, I wanted to go back and get that extra inch over her, and really, I thought I'd done it.
Yeah. And we see a pattern here, right, with your going to the auditions over and over again and not giving up. So this is also something for you who are watching and listening this. I mean, take that in, because the truth is that often we do not have that reaction. Many times we hit the wall, it doesn't work out, and then we say, oh, it wasn't for me, or this is a sign that I shouldn't be doing this, or, well, maybe the sign is that you need to work harder or figure out a different strategy to get there, right? So many times we give up too soon, or it becomes too painful and we don't want to experience that pain again. I mean, we can imagine the pain that you had then of not belonging, not fitting in. So it would be very easy to accept that. And okay, I'll find other friends. I'll find another group where I can fit in. This is obviously not for me. And when it comes to singing music, a lot of people have grown up with that, and they believe that I have no talent because I was told to shut up. I didn't fit into the choir. And I've interviewed other people who have lived with that their entire lives and always lived their lives believing that I cannot do something. This is not for me. So it's interesting that something within you has always, I mean, it's always been there, that you have had this instinct of when you fail, so to speak, you therefore do not run away, but it actually creates an urge to improve. And that's why you're still doing these trainings, and you come to my event and you do my online training, even though you've, this is actually a beautiful thing. I think this is a very inspiring message. And we can also argue that because you trained so hard to beat her, it forced her to train harder, and that's why she became an Olympian. So we could argue that you perhaps had significant impact on her also. She may or may not be aware of it, but that's how it works, right?
Well, she found a better technique, the Fosbury flop, and to my coach's dismay, I couldn't master it, and the coordination kind of wouldn't come.
So that's also a great metaphor for life. So she may not have been able to beat you if she continued doing what she had always done. So she was then searching for a different strategy. Fosbury flop had just appeared on the scene, and then she went for that, and she found a way to do it. So bravo for her, right?
Yeah, bravo for her.
Yeah.
She was a nice person.
Yeah. That's great. So now you've used, I also think is very interesting, inspiring, because having then grown up with that feeling of not fitting in, you have actually used music in so many different instances to bring people together. You mentioned an example when you were in India.
Well, no, when I was living in Jordan.
Okay.
We moved to Jordan, and, you know, it was our first posting overseas as a family, and it was, you know, it's quite tough. And you arrive there and you really don't fit in to begin with. You don't know anybody, and it's, you know, you have to start from scratch. You know, there's cocktail parties where you go to and you don't know anyone, and I remember feeling very awkward because the first one I arrived at, you know, it's in the days when people were wearing Alexis Carrington shoulder pad tops. I don't know if you've watched Dynasty. No, come on.
I do not know what this is.
Okay, the 80s shoulder pads, because this is 1986, 87. And, you know, I don't normally wear heels. I'm 5'10". I don't need to. So, but because I'm going to a cocktail party and it's, you know, when you were being a bit smart, I put on my high heels. And the first cocktail party we went to at the embassy, and I go in there, and as I make my entrance and I'm introduced, I fall off my high heels. So, you know, then you begin to feel, I felt a real klutz and thinking, you know, okay, this isn't, this isn't going well.
The strategy of fitting in is not working there. Okay.
No. However, you know, we managed to overcome that and make black conversation and do what you have to do. But I wasn't allowed to work. I was a scientist. So, you know, that was quite hard. So I had to find things to do. And I'm not really very good at sitting around, just lying around the pool or, you know, lunches and cocktail parties all the time. I need something more to keep me interested or amused or whatever. And I did do some coaching. Somebody found out I had these scientific qualifications. So I did some coaching of a dyslexic 11th grader from the American school, which was interesting. And I had to try and teach him genetics. Now, the language of genetics is difficult for people with dyslexia. So that was, you know, a learning curve, learning how to communicate a difficult concept using words that he could cope with, age 17. So that was one thing, how I passed the time. I learned a bit of Arabic just because I like to be able to communicate with people in their, you know, where you are, and it's a challenge.
Sure.
I'm not fluent in Arabic, but I know a bit. But the most important thing was chatting to somebody at the British Club, which is where there was a swimming pool, and we had our kids there on a Saturday afternoon, and somebody said, oh, you know, they play guitar, and I said, oh, I do too. And then somebody else said, yeah, and there's so-and-so as well. So I said, well, why don't we, and I used to belong to folk groups when I was a teenager, and we sang around the west coast of Scotland and pubs and hotel bars and stuff. And so I said, well, why don't we, you know, let's get together and do a bit of playing and singing, and then why don't we have we like doing this, so why don't we have a folk night once a month? So we did that at the British Club and formed the British Club folk band, so folk group, which was really, really fun. It's just wonderful. That made it for me, the whole experience, you know, being able to play my guitar and sing with other people.
Of course. Right. And did you say something that club is still happening or something?
I don't know. Maybe it still is. I mean, I know the British Club's still there. I haven't been to Jordan. Oh, yeah, my brother went to Jordan for a while. He worked for the United Nations.
Maybe that was something else you mentioned, that it was still ongoing, because you've created these constellations all over the place, haven't you?
No. Well, I wouldn't say that. But, yeah, I guess the next one. I went to Singapore and I got involved in, after that, went to India, where I really wasn't involved in music very much, which was, you know, and I wasn't singing, and I found that is not good for me. When I'm not singing, I don't feel fully myself if I'm not doing that.
Interesting.
When I went to live in Singapore, I joined a worship band there. There were, you know, people doing it, and they needed someone who could, you know, join in. So I did, but it wasn't as busy as I am with it now. And about 6-7 years ago, I did tell you that coming home was the hardest posting, actually. When you talk about fitting in, coming back to our village in the middle of Hampshire, where, you know, I should know everybody. But while they've what's happened? Are you still there?
Yep. Yeah.
So, coming home was really quite tough, because everybody, you know, you think you know everybody, but they've all been doing different stuff. And I've been away and, you know, exotic countries, camping in the desert and, you know, doing stuff in India and, you know, having experiences they can't really relate to, not as a holiday, but as everyday life. Yes. So that makes it, you know, and I felt like an outsider coming home.
Yeah.
And I found that really quite tough. So it took time to sort of integrate back in. But, you know, I spoke to somebody in the church and said, I play. He said, oh, would you like to join? So yeah, I did, and started singing. I didn't pick up my guitar for a while. I was shy because I hadn't played it with other people for a long time. So I was shy of doing that, but I felt I could sing. So I joined them there. And then this guy went off to Senegal. Very good worship leader he was, wonderful. He went off to Senegal and left us with nobody to lead. So somebody stepped in who wasn't really so good at sort of managing a team, and kind of one by one it sort of fell to pieces, and she just said she wasn't doing it anymore, which, you know, you can't blame her for. But I knew there were quite a lot of musicians that, you know, we should be able to have a worship band with all these people. So I invited them all to our house for a curry supper, and then we're all looking at each other around the room, and, you know, oh, there's four guitarists and two bass players and two keyboard players and two flautists and a saxophone player and an oboe player and at least four vocalists. So we have to be able to form, you know, more than one band with all these people. So, and it did grow out of that. The only thing I did was invite everybody to come, you know, look at each other. But it did provoke a sort of a group, a feeling that the group, you know, could survive.
Right.
And that's still going, and I'm still part of that, and it's I love it.
But isn't that amazing, though, the universal language of music, so that you've been able to use that wherever you go in the world to create communities, create connections, to be able to express yourself with your voice in music. Like you said, you come to a new country. If you're going to speak in the language, you have to study it, which you did. You said you studied Arabic. But with music, you can bring it everywhere. It's remarkable, really, when you think about it. And considering that once upon a time, maybe, it was not in, it might never have happened.
No, I could have remained deaf. So, you know, I'm very thankful that I am not deaf, that I can hear music. I mean, I love to listen to it, to play it, to sing it. It's very much part of me. I wish I could read music, and I have to tell you, my New Year's resolution was to read it properly. I mean, you know, like somebody like you who understands
it. Well, it depends on, there's so many different levels of reading also.
Sure. But I have been doing your music theory inside the Zinging Zone.
So what made you come to the Berlin event?
Sorry?
What made you come to the Berlin event? Or how did you find me in the first place?
Oh, I found you in the first place because my nephew, who is also has a beautiful singing voice, he's a sound engineer and he plays guitar really nicely, really well. He's a very cool kid. He's at the moment, poor guy, he's on a cruise ship in the Caribbean. He's trapped. Mm. So, but he liked it on Facebook. He liked you on Facebook. So I saw that and I thought, oh, that's intriguing, Sing with Freedom. So I looked into it and then I did your first four. I have the CDs actually. Mm. And then I joined the Singing Zone and I've been doing the masterclass. Now that's one of my favorites because I can do that when I'm in the car. I join in with whoever you're coaching.
Oh, okay. Fine.
So, and you know, if I'm in the car driving by myself, it doesn't matter what I sound like.
That's right. Yes.
And I like really, I like the way you do your coaching sessions because it's like you're in my sitting room talking to me. It feels very personal, and I like that approach. You know, I have to say I really enjoyed it and immensely, and have become certainly learned more about my vocal cords and the sort of physiology of what everything's doing in here and trying my best to separate them out.
That's helpful, isn't it?
And understanding actually that the vocal cords are actually a muscle. I hadn't even thought about it like that.
Yeah, and the muscles surround. I mean, there's so many muscles involved in any action in our body, right? So it's so interesting when we isolate that and we're able to release tension and muscle compensation and things like that and make things
operate. Well, I've just become much more aware of what it's all doing and what I'm doing with it.
Okay.
So, if I hear something I don't like, I kind of now sometimes know why and can then work on that.
Well, that's wonderful because someone like you who has been singing all your life and you're doing it for the joy of it, and sometimes we get into that a little bit of a fear that, I don't want to train because then it becomes too technical and then it's going to change my sound and then I'm going to become self-conscious about what I'm doing and then I'm not going to enjoy singing as much. And as a matter of fact, that can sometimes happen, which is why I'm not in favor of you should do this, you should stand like this, you should do this, because that happens to a lot of people. Then they become self-conscious about trying to do it right and they forget about enjoying the expression of music. So I'm glad you say that because the whole principle is about developing the awareness so you can do things about it. If you have a stronger instrument, you can do more things with it. So
the thing it's helped me with most is that, you know, I, like lots of people seem to suffer from, you know, phlegm, especially when I need to sing. You know, I get a frog in my throat, you know, or, you know, in church, we're usually singing in the morning, which isn't the, so I now do warm up before, make sure I warm up before singing in church.
Good idea.
And to get, but mainly to get rid of that little bubble of phlegm that always seems to come. Now, whether it's there because I'm nervous or because it's morning or because I have a bit of a tendency to get it because I have an autoimmune condition that affects the lining of the lung wall. And it can, it, if I'm having a flare up, it produces phlegm, which is very boring. But that's really helped being able to move that.
That's interesting. So whatever the cause is, you're saying then that doing these things actually releases it, if we use that word. Well,
the exercises you talk about.
That's great.
You know, particularly the ga-ga-ga-ga one and the singing very softly, you know.
Yeah. And people who are watching us, listening to this, don't know what we're talking about.
No, I guess.
Maybe, unless you've done my training. But
it's all in there.
but it is interesting that it's not about... Well, shall we get into this? Well, the phlegm that we experience, and you heard me, I cleared my throat also right now. Have a sip of water. But here's the thing. What causes it is one thing. We can address that. But when we set things in motion, the vibration itself clears it.
Yeah.
And it clears it better than doing that.
Well, doing that can be quite harsh on your vocal cords.
It's harsh, and it creates, it's like scratching your hand, and then you just want to scratch more. So it becomes irritating, and it becomes, very often it's just a habit. There's actually nothing there. I feel I need to, I need to do this, and it's just a habit. If we instead do create sound, then we actually create the vibration, create freedom, and suddenly we don't need to clear our throats again, which is... seems magical, but that's how it works. So fun. Fantastic. And you've also done...
I forgot a little thing.
Yep.
That, you know, I've been telling you that I've sung a few times in a worship band, not just folk bands. And when we were... I guess I must have been in my mid to late 20s. Another girl and myself, we were the first people, never mind the first women, but the first people ever to play guitars and sing modern worship songs in our church all those years ago. So we were kind of breaking the mold, you know, and now we're both the age we are.
Yes. Fantastic.
And she doesn't live here anymore, but I guess she's still doing it. And that was, you know, we had a lot of fun breaking the mold and having, you know, being able to do this in, you know, with others.
Yeah.
In the church, you know, in the church family with our friends and their kids. And yeah, that was also quite special. That was kind of the beginning of getting into worship.
Fantastic.
Which is a you know, some way you can express an emotion and you're wanting to express something you believe in and you feel strongly about. And I find doing that through song is really, you know, it's a great way to express.
Wonderful.
You know, what you feel through singing.
So what would life be like if you couldn't sing?
I can't imagine. It'd be like going back to being told to not sing. Can't imagine it at all.
Yes.
But you haven't heard me sing, so you don't know. You're just taking my word for it.
Well, see, it doesn't matter because it's not up to us to judge how good you are or if we like your style, if we like your voice. That's not what it's about. It's about your enjoyment. It's about the feeling you have when you express. And that's what I want to help people with. If we have voice problems, for example, then it's not... fun, or if we have some kind of issue, then it's not fun. And if I can help if that person can come alive in a new way and get new freedom to their voice, a stronger, healthier, more functional voice, and be able to do more things with it, the enjoyment that that person gets from it is what counts. What I think you sound like, or what someone else thinks you sound like, who cares?
I care.
You care. That's good. So that's good. That drives your desire to want to improve. And if you're not good enough to join this specific choir or this specific group, then either you can choose another group or you can improve to get to that level, right? If I can't play tennis in one certain league, that's not it has nothing to do with my self-esteem. It's just, okay, fine. I'm not good enough for that. Now, do I want to practice to get to that level? Maybe. I might have that drive or maybe not, but I can still enjoy it on different levels. But the fact that you are this kind of person, which we've explored now, that you want to improve, you don't accept a no, you don't accept that you're not good enough. At the same time, I'm sure you always feel that you're not good enough, because we all feel that. It doesn't matter how good or bad we are. We will always fall into that psychological trap of, oh, I don't fit in, I don't belong. You know, it's always our greatest fear. So we get that. But that can also be a driver that I want to improve. So that's good for you. I think that's inspiring right there. You are not aspiring to become a professional. That's not what it's about.
No, and it's too late in life to even try. It's not a course that was ever open to me.
Right. So, and that would not give you greater enjoyment, even if you were a professional.
No, I know. I mean, now I do it for the love of it.
Yeah.
And it makes me feel good, and makes me feel good about myself.
Fantastic. All right. Any advice for people out there?
Well.
Any final words?
If at first you don't succeed, you know, try again, because you never know how you might deal with it next time.
Yes, that's good.
And, you know, maybe look out some of your courses. There's another one I really enjoy is Your Perform with Freedom, because the way you get people to talk about or to look at what they're trying to convey, the intent of the song, and how you can make it be more magical in a way, because you encourage them to let go of the whatever's they're thinking about when they're worrying about how they're performing, instead of actually doing it as you talk about in the moment.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad you say that, because every singer has a preconceived idea of how a song should be sung. And a professional singer falls into that trap even more so, because they've sung the song many times. They have and it might be great, but they also have then become locked into how the song should be performed. So the whole concept of my live workshops, then when I bring singers up on stage, is to shake them up and make things different.
Yeah, I love that.
And then they come alive.
It's wonderful to watch, very entertaining, and seeing what you draw out of them, and
how,
you know, changes the game, and it becomes, some of them become really moving, and you know, definitely magic happens. I've seen it happen.
Yeah.
So if you get a chance to go to one of your workshops, I think they're amazing. I'm still in touch with some of the people who I met in Berlin, which is really special.
Fantastic. Well, it is amazing what we discover when we give ourselves permission to do things a little bit different. So I think that might be a good metaphor for this conversation here, actually, because it's not just that you kept doing what you've always done. There was a different strategy. Now, it wasn't your choice of doing the strategy of taking it with a tonsil procedure, but that was a different thing that then changed your life.
Changed everything.
Right? The high jumper changed her style, changed the technique that she used, right? And you taught, and what we talked about here, what I do then with the performers then is to shake things up, to break them out of the perceived idea of what they should do, and then suddenly they come alive in a new way. And you, when you're watching it, you think it's magical. Well, that's nothing compared to what the artist experiences, because now the artist experiences something like, wow, they had no idea that was even an option, because they haven't even thought of it. And this is still from someone who's very, very creative, who's willing to do new stuff, right? So, so maybe that's a good way to end this, by encouraging people out there to maybe do something a little bit different, look at different strategies, that not necessarily about giving up, but it's not necessarily about just keep doing what you've always been doing either. It is really finding different strategies, different angles, and always keep learning, always keep training. So you're a great role model for that, Selina. Thank you.
Well, thank you. I mean, I'm a lot of where I am now is thanks to having done your singing, Sing with Freedom program, and watching, you know, some of the Perform with Freedom and Masterclass sort of vignettes. You know, that it's unbelievably helpful, and I just I'm constantly trying to utilize those tips that you put in there that I can pick up and change. I have changed how I sing, definitely. It's changed. I think it's improved my range, and I hope it's improved my tone.
But that's fantastic, because that also makes it inspiring to have another performance, right? Because, oh, I want to try something new here. Oh, I want to implement this. And that also makes it fun.
Yeah. Well, I love harmonizing, and I quite often just, you know, add lib, harmonize. Sometimes I can pick it up from the, you know, the wind instrument. If they're playing what sounds like the right harmony, I'll you know, pick it from them. If I'm playing guitar, I have to say I prefer singing with my guitar, because it's, you know, it's a shield.
Uh-huh. Well, yeah.
that I quite like to, I feel more self-conscious without it.
Yes.
Not that I'm a great guitar player. I'm very average, yes. Comfortable but average. And, I can pick the note out to harmonize from the chord I'm playing. So right. I can hear that. And then sometimes I think, well, maybe that, you know, I could actually go up, do a fifth harmony instead of a third, yes, something yes. like that. So
brilliant.
Doing your music training is helping with that, the music theory.
Wonderful.
Understand how it all fits together.
Right. Like and combined with the ear training to hear what the difference is between a third and a fifth and a minor sixth or whatever it is that we're doing.
So, I'm not as advanced at minor sixth, but I was working on the circle of fifths, and as I was doing that, you mentioned it in one of those modules on the music theory.
Yes.
So I thought, okay, I'm going to really get to understand that now. I'm getting there. Because then you know where to put your capo when you want to change the key.
Fantastic. And the minor sixth is just a major third, but the other direction. Anyway, well, let's not go there. So,
no, you're going to lose me. No, I'm very,
anyway,
very big.
So thank you so much, Selina. This has been great. Yes, discover, explore, try something new, try different strategies, and go on, keep on singing, Selina.
Yeah, never give up.
Thank you so much. Bye for now.
Thank you. Bye.